Here in America, we've departed from the gospel of martyrdom and degenerated into the gospel of success.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, there's something that motivated, that mobilized, that moved Christians in the past to say, I want to go for it. I don't care what the cost or the consequence. I want to share Jesus with a lost and dying world. I want to give my life for souls. It's what moved missionaries around the world and Christian workers around the world. And in point of fact, we have departed far from the biblical gospel, the message that Jesus brought. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. It's a glorious life. Instead, we've substituted a carnal what's in it for me message, and I want to talk about it today right here with you on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. I would like to ask you a very simple question. Do you hear many calls today in the church, from the pulpits, through Christian media, and other ways you may hear the gospel? Do you hear many calls for sacrifice for the gospel? Do you hear many calls to take up the cross? Do you hear many calls to deny yourself? Or do you hear primarily a self-help message or even good doctrinal teaching and preaching, but not a call to sacrifice for the gospel, not a call that says my life for the gospel, my life for souls? You know, every one of us should have the same devotion to Jesus that a missionary should have on the field. Every one of us should have the same devotion to Jesus that people have who've laid down their lives through the centuries. In other words, this is the calling. This is the mindset of a disciple. My life for the gospel, my life for souls, not how can the Lord help me fulfill my dreams and goals, not how can I prosper in my business through Jesus. Now, let me make it plain that the Lord does bless us, and that when we honor him and walk in him and do his will, that he causes us to succeed in doing his will. But we have substituted that, friends, with a gospel of carnal success, a gospel of carnal success, a gospel of how to get ahead, a self-help message that focuses in on my needs and the things that I need from God to help me to lead a successful life. That's not the gospel of Jesus, friends. How much are you hearing calls to take up the cross and follow Jesus? Some of you that are listening are my age. I'm 57. Some of you are much older. Some of you are much younger. But in your lifetime, have you heard a shift in the gospel message? Oh, not everything old is good. We got a lot of old traditions and old ways that were just handed down to us that are not biblical, that need to be replaced. But there's a lot that's new that's not good. And I've written about it for many, many years, the gospel of martyrdom versus the gospel of success. The question is, why is it that men like Stephen, when they stood up to preach and speak in the New Testament, why is it that rather than finding a convenient way to save their lives, they spoke the truth? Because their goal was to be witnesses. Read the New Testament. Read how Paul lived. Read how the apostles lived. Read how New Testament disciples lived. Look at how believers have lived through the ages and live around the world today for the gospel. And ask yourself, is that the American message? Could it be that we have departed from the fundamentals of the gospel? Tuesday, a day of teaching, a day of opening up the word. I want to talk about this with you in a pointed way today. And again, ask you that question. Have we departed from the call to sacrifice and service for the Lord? If that was sounded in your church, I don't mean just come and help clean up the building on a Saturday. I mean, let's give our lives for souls for the gospel. Is that a foreign message today?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. The biblical gospel, how far have we departed from it? How far have we departed from the message that says, take up your cross and follow me, whatever the cost, whatever the consequence? How far have we departed from the message that has moved missionaries and servants of the Lord around the world through the generations, through the centuries? This has burned in my heart for decades. How far have we departed from that message? How foreign would it be to hear in our churches today? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. When's the last time, and I'm not asking you to name churches, to judge people, to call out names, but when's the last time you were challenged to give your life for the gospel? When's the last time, I don't mean just in your own walk with the Lord privately, but from a pulpit, from ministry coming your way over the air, through a book that you were reading, when's the last time you were really challenged to give your life for souls, to give your life for the gospel, to recognize that you're not your own, that you're bought with a price, that you live to do the will of God? When is the last time? In my book, It's Time to Rock the Boat, which came out in 1993, there's a chapter called, Are You Willing to Lose Your Life? Carl F. H. Henry said the early Christians knew that active faith in the crucified and risen Redeemer requires putting one's body on the line. James B. Taylor said, let no cross be considered too heavy to be borne in following Christ, no loss too great to be sustained for Christ, and no path too holy in going after Christ. John Bradford said this, if the Queen, he was potentially going to be martyred, British leader centuries ago, if the Queen be pleased to release me, I will thank her. If she will imprison me, I will thank her. If she will burn me, I will thank her. He was ultimately burned at the stake. Ignatius of Antioch, martyred early in church history. He said, I am the wheat of God, on his way to martyrdom. I am the wheat of God, and I'm ground by the teeth of the wild beasts that I may be found the pure bread of God. William Jay said, many who are great in the sight of the Lord are living in cottages and hovels and are scarcely known unless to a few neighbors equally obscure. I mean, we think that the superstar Christians are the ones that have big ministries, big churches, big radio shows, big TV shows, best-selling authors. And God certainly uses some people like that. Hopefully I can be on the radio and be a servant of the Lord, and having prominence doesn't disqualify me from being a faithful servant of the Lord. But often the choice servants, the world champions, the ones really out there making the most profound difference, the ones who are really taking up their cross and following Jesus, are the ones who are least known to us today. And you say, well, I mean, most of us here are not going to be martyred for the faith. Yeah, but there's a death to self. There's a death to our own will. There's a death to our desires. And we say, my life for the gospel, my life for souls, so that if the Lord calls us to go to the jungles of India or if he calls us to go to our own backyard, it's the same calling. Listen to what George Mueller said, and all these quotes I have in this chapter, Are You Willing to Lose Your Life? And It's Time to Rock the Boat. George Mueller said, there was a day when I died, utterly died to my opinions, preferences, tastes, and will. Died to the world, its approval or censure. Died to the approval or blame, even of my brethren and friends. And since then, I have studied only to show myself approved unto God. Can I read that again from George Mueller? Great man of faith, great man of prayer. There was a day when I died, utterly died to my opinions, preferences, tastes, and will. Died to the world, its approval or censure. Died to the approval or blame, even of my brethren and friends. And since then, I'd have studied only to show myself approved unto God. Not a matter of strutting around. Not a matter of being spiritual big shots. Not a matter of pointing to all the possessions that we've acquired in our carnal prosperity as a sign of spirituality or holiness. Friend, I know people who are rich Christians, and they love the Lord, and God has blessed them with riches. They are prosperous in this world, and they are good stewards, and they give very generously for the work of the gospel. And I know poor Christians who are greedy and who are covetous, But let me tell you, the moment we make earthly riches the sign of spirituality, the moment we make earthly success the sign of spirituality, and we substitute that for the call to take up the cross and follow Jesus, at that moment, we have departed from the fundamentals of the gospel. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, I know on a certain level I'm preaching to the choir in that many of you agree with me, and that's why you listen to this show. But I also know that the way to get successful in America is to come with a self-help message and to tell you how you can do better with it. By the way, I'm not making some big solicitation for funds right now. I want to make that clear. But I almost guarantee you, if I said we have an urgent need to sow seed into a certain part of the world for gospel work and to help with a crisis there, there's a famine, and we're going to be there to meet needs, and then we want to help get gospel workers out and so on, and we received money for that. Versus I had some gimmick. If you give a certain amount today, it's March 20th. If you give $320 on your credit card, that God will give you a 32-fold return for the next 6 months. Oh, if we manipulated that right, put it in the right setting, and I had the right charismatic look for TV, man, we'd bring in a whole lot more money doing that, playing games and manipulating people. You know, we often ask, does it sell? How's this trending? How's this going to work out with the people? Will they like this? Will they gravitate towards this? As opposed to, what's the will of the Lord? What's the counsel of the Lord? What's the truth of the gospel? 866-34-TRUTH. I copied out some quotes. A friend had sent out an article and copied out some quotes from D.A. Carson. It's relevant, so I want you to hear this. New Testament scholar D.A. Carson. He said, it is true, of course, that no man enters the kingdom because of his obedience. It is equally true that no man enters the kingdom who is not obedient. It is true that men are saved by God's grace through faith in Christ, but it is equally true that God's grace in man's life inevitably results in obedience. Any other view of grace cheapens grace and turns it into something unrecognizable. Carson continues, cheap grace preaches forgiveness without repentance, church membership without rigorous church discipline, discipleship without obedience, blessing without persecution, joy without righteousness, results without obedience. In the entire history of the church, has there ever been another generation with so many nominal Christians and so few real, that is, obedient ones? And where nominal Christianity is compounded by spectacular profession, it is especially likely to manufacture its own false assurance. Has the gospel, the gospel message changed in your lifetime? Did it start a certain way? And with a call to live for Jesus and a call to take up the cross and say no to the flesh and no to your goals and dreams and desires and say yes to the Lord so he could put his dreams, his goals, his desires inside of you? Did it change from that to something utilitarian? What God can do for me? 866-34-TRUTH. I've got a bunch of quotes I want to share with you. But first, let me go here. In my book, How Saved Are We? And I've got to be honest, I'm trying to figure out a way to get you to buy this book and read this book. We put a wonderful package, a wonderful resource package together, this book and one of the most powerful audio messages I ever preached, called Call to Die, at a leadership conference over 10 years ago that had a dramatic impact on the listeners and continues to speak powerfully. And I tell you, it is one of the most life-changing books I've ever written. It was life-changing for me to write it. How saved are we? What does it really mean to follow Jesus? I'm talking about a wake-up call, but it seems, as much as this book has impacted people since it came out in 1990, it seems when I offer it over the radio, I've only done it a couple times, people think, oh, I don't know if it's really for me. It's for you. Trust me, it's for you. 1865, David Livingstone, I'm reading from chapter 13, Going to All the World, from How Saved Are We? 1865, David Livingstone, the British missionary explorer, returned to Africa for his third and last time. From a 7 years, this bearded, toothless, haggard old man did not see another European. Amidst rumors that he had died, the New York Herald sent Henry Stanley to search for him in the jungles of Africa. It was Stanley, when Stanley found him, that he spoke those famous words, Dr. Livingstone, I presume. Stanley had been a worldly reporter who had fought for money on both sides of the Civil War, but his time with Livingstone changed him forever. We come back, I want to share with you what mercenary adventurer Henry Stanley said happened when he lived for 4 months and 4 days with missionary David Livingstone, how it changed his life, how he himself ended up on the mission field. This is The Gospel. We'll be back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire as we talk about the gospel of martyrdom versus the superficial American gospel of carnal success. I want to make it clear, we as followers of Jesus love life. We're not like the Muslim terrorists in Spain years ago who said, we love death, you love life. No, we love life. But we don't love our own lives. We don't cling to our own lives. Our mentality is our lives for the gospel. If our reputation gets spent for the gospel, so be it. If we get rejected for the gospel, so be it. If we lay down our lives for the gospel, so be it. We are in it in the service of the Lord. Our devotion to Jesus is deeper. It is deeper than the devotion that a soldier would have to his country or her country. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. We have departed from the gospel in so many ways here in America. All right, I'm going to go to the phones in a moment, but I'm reading from my book, How Saved Are We? I urge every single one of you to get a copy of this today. We've got it in a very inexpensive resource package, and this book and the audio CD will rock your world, light a fire in you, change your life, maybe even help you to experience personal renewal in your own life. It's the chapter, Go Into All the World. So no one's heard from David Livingstone. It's years now. They don't know if he's alive or dead in Africa. He's a Scottish missionary there in Africa. His third and last chore. For 7 years, almost 7 years, this bearded, toothless, haggard old man did not see another European. There were rumors that he died, so the New York Herald sent Henry Stanley to search for him in the jungles of Africa. And here's what Stanley wrote. For 4 months... and for 4 days, I lived with him in the same hut or the same boat or the same tent, and I never found a fault in him. I went to Africa as prejudiced against religion as the worst infidel in London. To a reporter like myself who had only to deal with wars, mass meetings, and political gatherings, sentimental matters were quite out of my province. But there came to me a long time for reflection. I was out there away from a worldly world. I saw the solitary old man there, and I asked myself, why does he stop here? What is it that inspires him? For months after we met, I found myself listening to him, wondering to the old man, carrying out the words, leave all and follow me. But little by little, seeing his piety, his gentleness, his zeal, his earnestness, and how he went quietly about his business, I was converted by him, although he had not tried to do it. On May 1st, 1873, Livingstone was found dead by his servants kneeling by his cot. As a token of their deep love and respect for him, the natives buried his heart in Africa before carrying his son mummified body to the coast, a journey of 9 months where it was returned to England. But Stanley's profound questions still speak to us today. Why did Livingstone stop there alone in the middle of nowhere? What was it that did inspire him? Why would a man or woman leave friends and family, forsake all earthly comforts, and risk sickness and death among a heathen people? What is it that so many missionaries saw that we do not see today? Why were they so deeply moved while we are so often unmoved? William Carey, called the father of modern missions, said, my business is to witness for Christ. I make shoes just to pay my expenses. All those quotes from How Saved Are We? 866-34-TRUTH. Nancy in Bayshore, Long Island, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm hearing what you're saying, and I agree 110%. I agree with what you're saying. We need to hear more of that. The thing that I find being, you know, I was part of a church for like 14 years, and I've since left. I've been looking for different churches, and only in the last 2 years that I find a congregation that I feel, you know, is healthy and gives a good message, and it sticks to the Bible. But even there, the call, you know, is not as strong to, you know, go out and into all the world and bring the gospel. And I just wanted to say that the message that the churches put out, and also you have to be careful because, like, this other church that I was part of, it almost used that message in a very manipulative way.
Yeah,
and
I understand.
Hurt a lot of people.
I understand. You know, and Nancy, I'd say this. And here's what I'd like to do. When we finish the call, stay on the line, and I want to send you as a gift our resource offer this week, my book, How Saved Are We, and the CD, Call to Die, just to help light a deeper fire in your own life. But the best thing to do, Nancy, find a few people of like heart that have a real burden to make a difference and get involved however you can, reaching out to the lost, to the hurting, to the poor, to the needy. Give yourself to prayer for souls and prayer for missions, and really pray blessing on the congregation, on the leadership, that the Lord would grip their hearts in a deeper and deeper way than ever. All of us fight against the American mentality, which is a this world mentality. Hey, come on, who won the Super Bowl? Hey, how are the stocks doing? Hey, what are the gas prices? What school are my kids going to? Those things to us become far more important than eternal issues. Excuse me. In many ways, we've fallen asleep right in the midst of the light here in America. And we need, as I say on the cover to my book, How Saved Are We? We need a rude awakening, not just a great awakening. So the key thing is keep your own heart pure, as free as you can of judging others. Keep your own heart pure, walk in love, and then give yourself to the work of the gospel. You live this out as much as you can, and sometimes your own example can help ignite others. All right, so stay right there, Nancy. Again, the resource offer this week, I'm trying to figure out how to tell you how important this book is and how when you read it, it's going to cause something to stir in your heart. Come on, you're listening to this broadcast. You're listening to me because you don't want fluff. And I'm not saying that others on the air or preaching or teaching fluff. I'm just saying that you're listening to me because you want someone who's going to tell it like it is. I always hear that when we do meet and greets with listeners. In fact, put this down. March 31st, everyone in greater New York area, we're limited to 50 seats. So put it down, and then we'll give you an RSVP number. But we're going to be having a special meet and greet in Manhattan Saturday night, 6 to 8 in the evening, March 31st, so a week from this Saturday. I'll tell you more about that as we get closer. But what I hear constantly from people as we do these meet and greets is they always tell me they appreciate me telling the truth. They appreciate me speaking the truth. They appreciate me not watering the thing down, not in some harsh, judgmental way, but speaking the truth. The truth is that Jesus calls all of us to leave everything and follow him, even if it doesn't mean physical upheaval, even if it doesn't mean selling our house and possessions. The devotion of our heart changes, and now we live to do the will of God. Get this book, How Saved Are We? It'll start a spiritual revolution in your own life. It'll probably drive you to your knees and move you to service of the Lord. Along with that, the audio message, Call to Die. So if you're a reader more, if you're a listener more, these will impact you. Just $20 for the two, postage paid. Trust me, this is not a money-making venture on our end. This is a way to sow seeds of spiritual revolution into your own heart and life. My way to serve you beyond this broadcast. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 or online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire or call 1-800-278-9978. Friends, we've only got one life. We've only got one opportunity in this world to make a difference, to drive back the forces of darkness, and to bring a smile to the face of our Lord. Let's go for it. Let's do it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the line of fire. Listen to these quotes to stir your heart. William C. Burns, who gave himself as a missionary to China, the 1800s, he said, "The longing of my heart would be to go once around all the world before I die and preach one gospel invitation in the ear of every creature." That's what he longed for. That's what burned within him. Souls. I don't care the cost, the consequence, I've got to go for it. He was being used in successful ministry in Scotland, powerfully used, a revivalist with great repentance and moving of the Spirit in his meetings and many people coming to faith. And when it was time to go to China, when can you go? Tomorrow. And he died with nothing, but he left a legacy behind. Jonathan Goforth, what a name for a missionary, huh? Missionary to China and Manchuria. He said, "I'm 65 today. Oh, how I covet more than a miser does his gold. 20 more years of this soul-saving work." I'm talking today about the gospel of martyrdom, the gospel that says, my life for the gospel, my life for souls, the biblical gospel, the New Testament gospel, versus our hyped-up American gospel of success that says that it's all about me doing better, a bigger and better me. Jesus died to make me into a bigger and better me. Now, look, I believe in success for the work of God. I believe as we do his will, he causes us to succeed. It may not look like success in the eyes of the world, but I believe as we do his will, he causes that to succeed for his glory and for his purposes. And I also believe that if he's got us in the business world or raising families, whatever, that if we honor him and do what's right in his sight, that his blessing will be upon us and we'll be channels of blessing to others. But that is light years away from the carnal contemporary gospel message that is preached all over America and has been now for the better part of a generation, a superficial what's in it for me message. Do you think that's the message that Paul lived by, that Peter lived by, that the other apostles lived by? You think that's the message that missionaries and martyrs of the past and present have lived by? Or has it been a message of, I've found the pearl of great price, I joyfully abandon everything to have him, to know him, and to make him known? 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to read some more excerpts, some quotes that will inspire you, that will challenge you, that will strengthen you, that will give you a vision of what really matters. Yeah, I want to stir your heart. I want to stir my heart. I want to ignite something deeper in my heart to live in the light of eternity and to live in a way that makes sense with a dying world surrounding us. It doesn't mean that every day is morbid. I saw you smiling, Mike. Why are you smiling? Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be smiling. No, there's joy in his presence. And in fact, if we don't have joy, if we don't have spiritual vitality, we will not be able to help a dying world. We will not be able to help a lost world. We will not be able to show them that Jesus is worth living for and worth dying for. Being depressed and hopeless doesn't minister life and hope to others, but let me make it clear that there's a world of difference between getting pumped up with a carnal message and having the joy of the Lord. Just looking for a quote here. There are today, well, as of a few years back, 12,000 distinct people groups without a native church. Out of the 6,100 languages spoken today, over half of them do not even have one verse of the Bible, because many of them small dialects. Not even one-tenth have a complete New Testament. Earth's population grows by over 250,000 human beings every day. Jesus bled for each of them. What in the world are we waiting for? This is our time to say, here I am, send me, use me. There's no waiting for something else. Yeah, God may shake America. And our own sin may shake America, and America may cease to be the nation that we knew it to be in many ways, and it could be in the midst of that that the church rises. But what's stopping you and me from taking up our cross today and saying no to the flesh, no to this world, and saying yes to the full claims of Jesus? Back with your calls and some quotes that'll rock your world when we come back.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, I don't want to live my life, at the end of living my life, look back and say, what in the world was I doing? I would rather stand before the Lord and the Lord say to me, you were too strict. I don't believe for a second he's going to say that to me. But I don't want to stand before him and have him say to me, you wasted your life. What were you doing? I'd rather he'd say to me, you were too strict with yourself. You pushed too hard. Again, that's not going to happen. But I would rather that happen. 866-34-TRUTH. Here, look at how George Whitefield lived. I mean, these were people who left their mark through the generations. We talk about Whitefield. He died in 1770. His voice still thunders to this day. At one point, he noted, my constant work now is preaching about 15 times a week, and my greatest grief is that I can do no more for him who hath done and suffered so much for me. 1753, the age of 39, he wrote, let none of my friends cry to such a sluggish, lukewarm, unprofitable worm. Spare thyself. Rather spur me on, I pray you, with an awake thou sleeper, and begin to do something for thy God. That was Whitefield. 1754, having recovered from some serious illnesses, he wrote to John Wesley from America, my health is wonderful, though I ride whole nights and have been frequently exposed to great thunders, violent lightnings, and heavy rains, yet I am rather better than usual, and as far as I can judge, am not yet to die. Oh, that I might at length begin to live! I am ashamed of my sloth and lukewarmness and long to be on the stretch for God. That was Whitefield. And when he was urged to slow down, take better care of himself, he replied, it is better to wear out than to rust out. Every one of those quotes found in my book, How Saved Are We, which I wish I could find a way to get into the hands of every single one of you listening, because it'll rock your world when you read it. 866-34-TRUTH. Fred in Somerville, New Jersey, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how you doing, man?
Doing well, thanks.
It's good to talk to you. I did have questions because I did go to the debate last Monday, which I want to say it was very nice, but I had questions just coming from listening to the topic at hand, and I'd like to maybe address that. And, you know, I mean, the things that you're saying are so pertinent today, you know what I mean, and so important.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really have to wonder within myself, does the church actually understand what its mission is to the rest of the world? And I look at televangelists and stuff, and I got to wonder, what are these people thinking? I really do.
Yeah,
Our message was supposed to be mercy.
I agree with you in terms of much of the church not really having a sense of a calling to the Great Commission, of a calling to win our neighborhoods and our neighbors, of a calling to make an impact for the gospel, whatever the cost, whatever the consequence. For many years, Fred, I've led people in public prayer of devotion to the Lord, if it was the right way to end a service. And I have said, you know, that we pledge ourselves, and I have people repeat after me, whatever the cost, whatever the consequence, whether by life or by death. And for some, it sounds so radical, but that's just the normal New Testament mentality.
Well,
that's
I understand that, but I think a lot of what constitutes modern evangelism now, and it's something that I've said myself before, it's basically pulling your rowboat up to a drowning man and demanding that he learns how to swim before you pull him in the boat. It's people want to do all this converting before they lead people to the saving knowledge of Christ. And to me, that's just, I kind of have to say, I think it's abominable, and I think it's prevalent nowadays. I think it's terrible.
Yeah, I do believe that's part of it. But I would also say that the bigger issue is that we preach a superficial message. We don't tell people that following Jesus means radical transformation. We don't tell people that following Jesus means the end of their old life, the beginning of a brand new life. He's the one who does the converting. He's
exactly
the one who does the changing. But so much of our message is pretty much, it's like telling someone, your meal is not so good, but if you believe in Jesus, you'll have a great meal, as opposed to take up your cross, follow him, no to the flesh, yes to the will of God. That's the gospel. That's what it means to be a disciple. And I would dare say if God shook the Church of America with all of our church attendance and all of our mega churches and our house churches and all of the other things in between, if he shook it all looking for disciples and devoted followers of him who are willing to take up the cross and willing to suffer reproach and willing to go against the grain and willing to be rejected, maybe willing to lose everything, he would find precious few real disciples. And that's a cause of great concern.
Well, it is a cause of great concern, but I think people still seem to want to forget that it is that it's God himself that does the converting and not us. We're supposed to bless. I mean, especially the modern church. I'm not saying, you know, like grace is
cheap. But let me just ask you something. I mean, I almost never hear the message you're talking about of telling people to, you know, they've got to improve or do better before they can be saved.
Really? That's all I ever hear.
Yeah, what kind of circles?
I mean, you turn on the TV. I have all the evangelical channels.
They're not saying that.
I believe they are.
No, they're not saying improve yourself. They're barely even telling you sometimes that you need to change.
Oh, no, no, but what I'm talking about is by the time it gets to the street, by the time it gets to the individual believer, it's a message of judgment. It's not a message of salvation. I mean, yeah, I don't live my life depending on what's being, you know, taught
on TV. It could be.
I
just have to say, honestly, Fred, I hear something very different. But listen, man, I appreciate you calling. And the bottom line is, yes, we must preach Jesus. We agree on that. We must preach him as the exalted one, as the only Savior, as the only deliverer, as the only one who can make us whole. But we need to preach him as Lord, that it is now a matter of your life belongs to a different master. Hey, Fred, Thursday would be a good day to call in, maybe next week, if you wanted to ask some questions about the kosher Jesus debate or something like that. But good talking with you. May Jesus be exalted in your own life, Fred. Thank you, sir, for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Yaw in Sterling, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How about you?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. First of all, I want to say I very much appreciate what you do. I've been listening to you for a while, and I'm glad that I actually finally got myself to actually call the station and air my comment on here. But What I wanted to say basically is that last night I was watching a documentary that I got from the library. It's called 1040. And he's talking about the Christianity in the New Asia,
yep.
In certain parts of Asia, China, you know, Taiwan, and most of the Asian countries.
Right.
And basically what is going on there is that, you know, God is moving the people so much, like there's such a movement going on over there where they have such a hunger for God. And I was watching this, and I was just amazed. You know, I was asking myself, these are guys that, 10, 20 years ago, didn't believe in God at all, didn't have Christianity at all. And now, you know, there's this massive movement going on over there. You know, and I asked myself, what would it take, you know, for that sort of a movement to happen, you know, in the Western world?
Yeah, it's a big question, isn't it, y'all? One thing that helped me, and when I wrote the book, How Saved Are We?, what influenced me was traveling to different nations and seeing the way people were living for the gospel and seeing the commitment missionaries had for the gospel. And they were just regular people. So they had this burden. In fact, much of the 1040 window, many of the peoples from those nations are now here in America. We can reach them right here, but we're not thinking the same way. We have gotten caught up with carnality. We've gotten caught up with materialism. We've gotten caught up with a what's in it for me mentality rather than the mentality of my life is here to make a difference. My life is here, as one of my friends says, plundering hell to populate heaven, you know, wiping the smile from Satan's face to put a smile on God's face, so to say, to use earthly terms there. And we basically think in terms of what will this cost me? How will this benefit me? Almost like a business deal. Okay, here's right. The risk factor. Here's the benefit factor, as opposed to I'm abandoned to the Lord. I live to do his will. And if he hasn't sent me to the 1040 window or somewhere else, then he sent me right where I am. I am a sent and as much a missionary where I live and the community I live in. That should be my mentality, at least, as I would be if I was sent to another part of the world. And what's it going to take in America? I believe that for a real sweeping move of God to take hold of our nation, it's going to mean shaking us to the core.
Yeah.
And the people in Asia, yes, some of them have heard a superficial message in some parts of the world, but for the most part, they know that following Jesus could cost them everything. I always say the friends we work with in India, when they do a water baptism, they ask the people at the water baptism, are you willing to follow Jesus by life or by death to your last drop of blood, your last drop of breath, to get baptized? That's where they start. And they could teach us a whole lot. That's why I wrote the book, How Saved Are We? Thank you, sir, for calling and for listening.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Listen to the story of Henry Martin. I'm talking about the gospel of martyrdom versus the gospel of success. And having a death wish but saying, my life for the gospel, my life for souls, my life to make a difference versus what's in it for me, how can I better myself through the gospel mentality. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm urging every one of you listening to get my book, How Saved Are We? Oh, I know it's not a How to Get Rich Off the Gospel book. I know it's not a self-help book, how to counsel yourself. And it's not that. It's a wake-up call. But I'm telling you, this little book, less than 130 pages, may change the rest of your life. How Saved Are We? Has the church fallen asleep in the enemy's lap? A book written to believers, along with an audio message called To Die. Our special resource offer, either the book or the CD, will rock your world and perhaps draw you to a place in God you've not been before, make you far more effective and fruitful, and give you a deeper heart for the Lord and for the lost than perhaps you've ever had, both for your gift of just $20, postage paid, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Here's an example from the book before I go back to the phones. What was it that moved the heart of brilliant young Henry Martin almost 200 years ago? He relates that his Cambridge fellows, quote, thought of the most improper step for me to leave the university to preach to the ignorant heathen, which any person could do. Martin also found pastoral work difficult and he had no visible success as a soul winner. But in spite of all this, he had a clear and definite call from God. Quote, may the Lord be pleased to fix this in my mind, that I am in the midst of dying souls who are thronging to hell. How cruel, how impious to let a brother perish for want of warning. At one time, he would never have sacrificed material well-being for the gospel, but now his heart was gripped for India's multitudes. 10,000 times more than ever do I feel devoted to that precious work. Oh, gladly shall this base blood be shed, every drop of it. If India can be benefited in one of these children, if but one of these base creatures of God Almighty might be brought home to this duty. Saying goodbye to his homeland was heartbreaking for him. It was even more difficult to leave behind Lydia Grenfell, a young woman whom he passionately loved and would have married, not for his fear that marriage could be a hindrance to his call. To add to all the difficulties, his own frail health was failing. Oh, my dear friends in England, he recorded in his diary, when we spoke with exultation of the mission to the heathen, whilst in the midst of health and joy and hope, when an imperfect idea did we form of the sufferings by which it must be accomplished. Yet he gave himself without reserve, always putting the needs of others first. His efforts in India and Persia were Herculean, and his saintliness and godliness legendary. Why did he give himself so unsparingly to the work of the Lord, often standing alone against British indifference, Indian apathy, and Muslim hostility? Why did he refuse to let up or back down even when his own body was rapidly deteriorating? Quoting R.T. France, the man who slaved away his life among the people whom the lowest clerk of the East India Company would have despised and who dragged his dying body over many hundreds of miles of sea and mountains, did it for this purpose, to do the will of God and to save men and women from destruction. Does the spirit that moved Henry Martin, does that spirit move you? Does that calling move you? Does that bird move you? Is it very foreign to you? If it's foreign to you, get the book, How Saved Are We? Read it. Get on your knees before the Lord and say, God, light a fire in my heart to live in the light of eternity and to live for souls and to live in such a way as to make a difference in this world and in the world to come. 866-34-TRUTH. Jared in Colorado Springs, Colorado, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Brother Brown?
I'm doing very well, thank you, sir. How about you?
Good, doing well out here, just hanging out. I just called in, you know, to relate, you know, you're asking basically, you know, when's the last time you heard a faithful call, you know, an altar call or whatnot, and, you know, it is, being in a bigger conservative area out here in Colorado Springs, you know, there's a lot more faithful churches here, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I think another scary thing is actually being in some of those places where they do preach a faithful message and give the truth and whatnot and give out an altar call and just seeing a complacency, you know, kind of stirs you in heart to hear a message preached, you know, that's faithful. And, you know, you were talking earlier something about preaching to the choir, but it's like, you know, the choir as well thinks they've arrived. You know, a lot of us think that we've arrived. So, I mean, even, you know, a faithful message preached, you know, it seems like there's little response to that, you know what I mean? So it's it is troubling on both ends of the coin. But what you're saying, definitely too, the most popular messages, as the gentleman was saying earlier, that he had heard more messages on judgment and whatnot. I mean, that's really not the more successful gospel. Obviously, by turning on our TV or most radio shows or whatnot, you don't hear that. So no. That as well is troublesome, I think, for the lost world, you know, that that's the message they're most likely to get is the one that's, you know, salt-free or whatnot. And
yeah, it's just the message that people are likely to hear is kind of a benefits plan that if you follow Jesus, that everything just goes well. You know, you're having struggles in your life, ask Jesus and you can have a better life. He's the one that can meet your deepest needs. Well, it's true he meets our deepest needs, but he doesn't make a deal with us. We are lost, hellbound without him, under judgment because of our sins. He takes our sins on his shoulders to redeem us so that we no longer live for ourselves, but live to do his will. And now we belong to him, whether he sends us to the mission field, whether he sends us into the business world, whether he calls us to have a big family. We now belong to him and we live to do his will. And a life consumed with the will of God, a life consumed with passion for God, a life consumed with desire for God, that's a life of discipleship. That's a life that joyfully leaves everything to follow Jesus and says, my life for the gospel, my life for souls. And if we live to be 90 years old with health and prosperity, we have the same mentality as if he called us to lay down our lives as martyrs at the age of 20 years old. It's the same mentality, same devotion. And I'm sad to say that the church is hearing that very, very seldom. And the lost are hearing that very, very seldom. Think of someone so glorious that when we preach him, we tell everyone they have to leave everything to follow him. You know, as opposed to trying to make a deal and meet some way halfway in between where they'll be happy with the message. Hey, Jared, thank you for calling. May the Lord help us to live this out. If you see a problem somewhere else, look at your own life and say, how can I live this out for the gospel? How can I make my own life count? Pray for the churches. Pray for the leaders. We're all part of this. We're all in this together. It's not us and them. But say, Lord, how can I live this out? Trust me, friends. Make the small investment of $20. This is not some money-making venture. This barely pays for itself. Get the book, How Saved Are We, and the audio CD, Called to Die, and find out what the gospel is really about, what it really means to follow Jesus. We've put them together in a package, just $20. Postage paid. If you could send more, that would be awesome. But I want to sow this into as many of you as possible. All right? So let's go for it. Let's make a difference. 1-800-278-9978. If what I'm saying on the air resonates with you, get the book and the CD. It'll ignite your life. 1-800-278-9978 or online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. My bottom line today, Jesus says to all of us, follow me. Jesus says to all of us, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. What are we holding on to? What is holding us back from following him? Let's smash the idols. Let's say no to the lust of the flesh and desires of this world. And let's say, Lord, here I am. Send me. The teachings of Jesus stand everything upside down, turn everything on its head. Are we really willing to follow Jesus?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, you read the words of Jesus, and they're radical. You read the words of Jesus, and they rock our world. You read the words of Jesus, and you realize he turns everything upside down. He turns things on their head. He turns the values of this world and turns them upside down so that we now live with different principles, with different goals, with different reasons. Are we really willing to follow the words of Jesus? Are we willing to follow the biblical gospel? Or have we changed it into some carnal, what's in it for me version? Michael Brown, thank you for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Yeah, I'm burning again. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. What does it really mean to follow Jesus? What does it really mean to take up the cross and deny ourselves? Why did he tell Peter that it was Satan speaking through him when he was trying to get Jesus to bypass the cross? Why did he tell him, you do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men? Why did Jesus say elsewhere that the things that are highly esteemed among people are often abominations in the sight of God? Just think of it. He goes up on the mountain. The great crowds are coming after he's healed and worked miracles. Great crowds coming. So he goes up on the mountain. He sits down and his disciples come to him. You'd often sit at the feet of a Jewish teacher in those days. He sits down, his disciples come to him. He opens his mouth and teaches, blessed, truly happy are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Not the proud, not the haughty, not the self-sufficient. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are those who mourn. Mourn? That's a blessed? Yeah, because your heart hurts for dying and lost world. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Well, the meek often get trampled on, it seems, by people in this world. Meekness is not weakness, but the meek often get trampled on. They don't assert their own rights many times. They put others first. They're not boisterous and troublemakers. They inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Thinking of hunger and thirst, you don't think of that as blessed? You know, we have a hunger problem, thirst problem, people dying of famine, people dying of drought. Hunger and thirst, we normally look at as negative conditions. Jesus says, you're blessed if you hunger and thirst for righteousness, if you're longing for God's kingdom and God's ways in the earth. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the merciful. Yeah, not the ones who are selfish and saying, put my needs first, but the ones who are merciful and not judging and condemning, but showing compassion. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The world looks at us like we're crazy when you're pure in heart. The world looks at you like you're from another planet or from some prudish, lost, bygone generation. Blessed are the pure in heart. Oh, you may not know all the names of the latest stars, and you may not know all the names of the latest movies and TV shows, and you may not be savvy on lots of things the world's savvy on, and you're devoted to the Lord and pure in your thinking and attitude, you're going to see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Yes, we will be persecuted for the gospel, but he doesn't say blessed are the troublemakers, but the peacemakers. And then blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Friends, these are the words of Jesus. How do we relate to them?
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. You know, I was reading those words of Jesus yesterday and rejoicing. It was after the show, and I noticed one particular website had gone after me, and comments were pouring in ugly, very, very ugly, very nasty, very, very crude comments. Great, great majority of the time, I don't even bother to look at them. And lost people are going to say lost things. You just pray for them. That's it. But yesterday I decided to read it. And as I'm reading uglier comment after uglier comment and nastier accusation after nastier accusation, I honestly started to get more and more encouraged by the moment. And I thought of these words of Jesus: blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Friends, we've got things stood upside down here. We've got things stood upside down in terms of the American gospel message. So much of the time, the message that we present is a self-serving message, a self-edifying message, a self-advancing message, a self-glorifying message, a build-up self message, as opposed to a deny self, take up the cross, follow Jesus. Well, that just sounds like bad old-time religion. I like the new way. Well, A.W. Tozer said this many years ago, that the old cross killed the sinner. The new cross redirects him. Here's the way to have a bigger and better life. Come this way for your bigger and better life. Ask Jesus into your life. You'll get a spiritual infusion. You'll be positive and you'll be happy, happy. I don't want the negative stuff. Take up your cross and follow Jesus with the doleful music and depression. No, that's not the gospel. Neither of those are the gospel. This help, self-help, self-promoting message is not the gospel, nor is this depressed, hopeless message the gospel. You encounter Jesus in his beauty and his glory and his power and his majesty and his wonder, and all you care about is doing his will. All you care about is making him known. Can I ask you a question? How hard was it when you first got saved? Unless you were raised in the faith, and as long as you can remember, you've loved the Lord. But if you got wonderfully born again, came out of the world, got saved, how hard was it for you to share your faith? Maybe a few it was difficult, but for most of us, just you wanted everybody to know. You were different. People saw the change, and you want everyone to know about your Jesus. And for me, if the Lord said to me, okay, go here and preach or give your life for these people, that would have sounded like a privilege to me. I was reading some of the accounts of Jim Elliot and Nate St. Peter Fleming, the five young men who in 1955 gave their lives to reach the Aka Indians, 55, 56, as they went to preach to the Aka Indians and were martyred, or the Alka. I've pronounced it Aka for years, but I guess it's Alka. And I was reading one of them saying, you know, I'm willing to give my life for this tribe. These were married men. Four out of the five had kids, but they were all five married. These were serious things they said they did. Why? Because they had a heart for the gospel, because they had a heart for souls, because they had a heart that said, I want to make a difference, because they knew they were not here primarily for themselves. Let me tell you the story of Adoniram Judson. This you'll find in my book, How Saved Are We? If the story moves you, get the book just for this story, but it's filled with stories like this. 866-34-TRUTH. And my question to you, has the gospel message changed in your lifetime? How often are you hearing a call to lay your life down for souls? How often are you hearing a call to get involved in the Great Commission in a serious way, beyond an occasional missions offering, beyond an occasional outreach, in terms of the mission of the church being to give ourselves for a lost and dying world? Adoniram Judson, he was America's first foreign missionary. So in other words, the first American that sailed out of our country to preach the gospel. He was born in Massachusetts, August 9th, 1788. His whole story is quite amazing. He fell away from the faith for a period of time. Maybe one day I'll tell more of his story. Fell away from the faith for a period of time. Dramatically came back to faith. Was a brilliant, brilliant young man. And became an outstanding college seminary student. now he feels a calling to the mission field. He's preparing for his departure for India and Burma in 1810. So he's in his early 20s. And he falls in love with Nancy Hasseltine. Now, here's the thing that's interesting. Everybody was thoroughly impressed with his eloquence and with the forcefulness of his personality, his conviction to raise funds to go on the mission field. And yet, when he meets Anne, he's kind of smitten. So she's not impressed with him. Well, he falls in love. And she was the prized teenage daughter of a socially prominent family. She was a fun-loving young woman before being born again at age 15. And after that, she was devoted to the Lord. Her family, you know, famous socialite family, so on, and she was the life of the party kind of thing. She gets saved at 15. When her father hears her praying, and as I remember, under conviction for her sins, he himself gets saved. But he's only saved a few years now. So Judson could not marry her without her father's consent. So he writes this letter to Anne Nancy's father, John. And remember, he's a relatively new believer. Are you ready for this? You're ready for this. If you're about to get out of your car, just hang on. Hear this letter. I have now to ask whether you can consent to part with your daughter early next spring to see her no more in this world. Whether you can consent to her departure and her subjection to the hardships and sufferings of a missionary life, whether you can consent to her exposure to the dangers of the ocean, to the fatal influence of the southern climate of India, to every kind of want and distress, to degradation, insult, persecution, and perhaps a violent death. Can you consent to all this for the sake of him who left his heavenly home and died for her and for you, for the sake of perishing immortal souls, for the sake of Zion and the glory of God? Can you consent to all this in hope of soon meeting your daughter in the world of glory with the crown of righteousness, brightened with exclamations of praise which shall redound to her Savior from heathen, saved through her means from eternal woe and despair? That's what Judson wrote to Nancy's father. Think of that. Marriage proposal. Would you give your daughter to be married, send her to the mission field, never see her again? She'll die there, maybe a violent death, but for souls. Will you do that? Amazingly, to the shock of his friends, the father left the choice to her. John left the choice to Nancy. Soon she wrote to a friend, I have about come to the determination to give up all my comforts and enjoyments here, sacrifice my affection to relatives and friends, and go where God, in his providence, shall see fit to place me. In spite of some fears, she knew she could rest in the faithfulness of God, although, as she said, quote, no female has, to my knowledge, ever left the shores of America to spend her life among the heathen, nor do I yet know that I shall have a single female companion, but God is my witness that I have not dared to decline the offer that has been made me, though so many are ready to call it a wild and romantic undertaking. Judson labored for almost 7 years before winning their first convert. After 9 years, they had baptized only 18. Several of their fellow missionaries died. Others left the work. Their first baby was stillborn during their initial voyage from Calcutta to Burma. Their second baby, Roger, died before reaching his 9 month. Adoniram himself was brutally imprisoned for 17 months during a crackdown against all foreigners, barely surviving the horribly inhuman treatment. One night, while his raw and bleeding feet were hanging in elevated stocks, swarms of mosquitoes settled on his bare soles, producing excruciating torture. Then, not long after his release from prison, Adoniram's beloved wife, Nancy, died. Her constant life of sacrifice and service has finally taken its toll. Just a few weeks later, little Maria, their third baby, was suddenly taken from this world. Judson was left utterly alone in a hostile Buddhist land, almost shattered with pain and grief. Before him lay the prospect of tiger-infested jungles, bat-infested houses, and a fever-infested climate for life. Behind him lay an almost unimaginable trail of hardship and loss, but he did not leave off from his work. He did not abandon his Bible translating or his preaching and teaching labors. How could he? Eternal souls were at stake. Who else could reach the Burmese as well as he? So he remained for over 20 more years, returning to America only once, and that by necessity, not by choice. For Judson, missions was a lifetime commitment, and he had no place for those who wanted to come to the mission field on a short-term basis only. Quote, they come out for a few years with the view of acquiring a stock of credit on which they may vegetate the rest of their days in the congenial climate of their native land. The motto of every missionary, whether preacher, printer, or schoolmaster, ought to be devoted for life. You say to me, well, Mike, you haven't given your life on the mission field. That's why I'm quoting Adoniram Judson to you. That's why I'm quoting from those who've done this, who challenge you, who challenge me to make our lives count. Jesus turns the values of this world upside down. In the words of Leonard Ravenhill, I ask you again, are the things you are living for worth Christ dying for? Stay tuned to get your hearts ignited.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Did you hear about the teenage girl in England? This was a few weeks back. I read the report. Teenage girl in England, all she has eaten all her life for meals since the age of two is chicken nuggets. Chicken nuggets. I think she's just a teenager. I don't think she's 20 yet. And her health is starting to break down. Now, she may have something that supplements the chicken nuggets, but basically chicken nuggets only. Now, of course, there was the pathetic quote from her mom. Yeah, this is all she's eaten since she was two. Well, mom, that's up to you. She can't get in the car and drive there and get her happy meal. Okay? It's up to you in terms of what a two-year-old eats. If they got some food allergy, that's one thing. This is not a food allergy issue. But her health is starting to break down. She's already experiencing problems, which is, I would say, a mercy. And she's got to radically change her diet. Well, what does the American church look like with a chicken nuggets diet at best for most people for decades? It looks the way it looks. I'm not surprised. I'm grieved. I'm pained, but I'm not surprised. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire. Look, I do not feel and I am the man with the message, and this is the program that is telling it like it is, and nobody else is telling the truth. No, of course not. But I'll tell you this. I can tell you some things are right and some things are wrong, and I can tell you what foundations are, and I can tell you what the basics are, and I can tell you what the gospel is and what the gospel is not. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Last couple of years, I've gotten to work out more, cardio, lifting, kind of put together in these intensive workouts, try to do it a few days every week. And, you know, if I'm overtired, I'll have a partner I work out with. If I'm overtired, I'll tell them, hey, we can't be competing because you always compete against each other just to push harder. And I'll tell them, hey, I can't compete today. Let's work out, but I can't compete because I'm too sleep deprived. Or let's just say I haven't been able to eat anything that day, maybe just had, you know, small fiber bar in the morning or something like that, or protein bar, and I haven't eaten much, and I start to feel weak. I'll say, okay, you know, because I'm 57, I've got to use some wisdom, and we push hard. You know, I haven't been taking care of myself properly. I just came back from overseas. I'm a little jet lag. We'll do a light workout, you know, but I can't really do anything intense. Well, friends, when we have – how do you describe the gospel hodgepodge that's been preached and that ignores so many of the words of Jesus, so much of the call to discipleship, so much of the call to take up the cross and follow him, so much of the call to deny ourselves. He says it over and over. You'll find it in Matthew 10 and Matthew 16 and Mark 8 and Luke 9 again in Luke 13, then you find it in a different form in Luke 9, then Luke 14, then Luke 17, and then John 12 in another form, and in Paul's words and Acts 20, and then repeated Revelation 12. The message that if you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for his sake in the gospel, you find it. Do we preach that? Do we know what it means? Do we understand the meaning of taking up the cross? Do we understand the meaning of turning our backs on the things of this world so as to do the will of God? 866-34-TRUTH. I'll tell you what. Next half hour, I want to tell you one of my favorite stories to illustrate this point. Adoniram Judson, I was talking about him before the last break and his devotion to the people of Burma. On one occasion during the great annual festival held at the towering Golden Buddhist Pagoda in Rangoon, he recorded that he had distributed nearly 10,000 tracts given to none but those who asked. This remembered that they labored 7 years before they won their first convert, and after 9 years, they'd only baptized 18 in the early 1800s in Burma. He said, "Some come 2 or 3 months' journey from the borders of Siam and China. Sir, we hear that there is an eternal hell. We are afraid of it. Do give us a writing that will tell us how to escape it. Others come from the interior of the country where the name of Jesus Christ is a little known. Are you Jesus Christ, man? Give us a writing that tells about Jesus Christ." For Judson, it was worth it all. I mean, well over 1 million Burmese Christians as of a few decades ago, and the church going through great persecution. A lot of their roots go back to Judson there. How many of you have heard of John Payton? John Payton. What is it that constrained Scottish-born John Payton to go as a pioneer missionary to the, quote, cannibals of the South Sea Islands, devoting almost 5 decades to the work? You realize that the first missionaries that got there were killed and then eaten by the cannibals. While struggling through university, divinity, and medical studies in Scotland, Payton had been sustained, quote, by the lofty aim, which he said burned all these years bright within my soul, namely to be owned and used by him for the salvation of perishing men. He became grieved when no one in his church synod responded to the need for a new missionary to be sent to the South Seas. The Lord kept saying within me, since none better qualified can be got, rise and offer yourself. Almost overpowering was the impulse to answer aloud, here I am, send me. Can I read this again? His church synod is saying we need a new missionary to send to the South Seas. Oh, we know what happened to the first missionaries that went there. You want us to go to the South Seas? The Lord kept saying within me, since none better qualified can be got, rise and offer yourself. Nobody else is coming forward. Nobody else is making themselves available. Almost overpowering was the impulse to answer aloud, here I am, send me. But Payton did not want to mistake his own emotions for the call of God, so he continued in prayer and careful deliberation for a few more days. I'm reading this from my book, How Saved Are We? So he could look at the proposal from every angle. He said, I felt a growing assurance that this was the call of God to his servant. The wail and claims of the heathen were constantly sounding in my ears. I saw them perishing for lack of the knowledge of the true God and his son Jesus, while my Green Street people in Scotland had the open Bible and all the means of grace within easy reach. Yet his decision to go was opposed by almost everybody. Some retorted upon me, there are heathen at home. Let us seek and save first of all the lost ones perishing at our doors. We must evangelize our home front first, right, before we worry about the rest of the world. Aren't there millions of sinners living all around us? Isn't it logical and right to preach to them first? Payton agreed, in fact, that there were many heathen at home. This I felt to be most true and an appalling fact. But I unfailingly observed that those who made this retort neglected those home heathen themselves. They would ungrudgingly spend more on a fashionable party at dinner or tea, on concert or ball or theater, on some ostentatious display or worldly or selfish indulgence, 10 times more perhaps in a single day than they would give in a year or half and a half a lifetime for the conversion of the whole heathen world, either at home or abroad. Oh, yeah, they're perishing heathen near us. John Payton, don't go to the South Seas. Why are you going there? They're heathen here. He's like, well, who are you to tell me? You're not making any sacrifice to reach them. And he went, gave his life for souls. I'll share the results the other side of the break. I said in the first hour, I'm a little frustrated because How Saved Are We is one of the most important books I ever wrote. And the people who've read it, I can't tell you how many have been impacted for life. And yet it seems it's not like a hot item on the radio. I've only offered it 1 or 2 times. Can I tell you, this would be one of the most important books you've ever read and it'll rock your world. And we've packaged it with a CD, Call to Die, one of the most important messages I've preached. If you're serious about Jesus, get these. Just $20 postage paid. If you can add in an additional gift, that would really help us. $20 postage paid for the book and CD. Call to order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Let's get on with it. Let's give our lives for the gospel, for souls.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You hear the words of the music. Shake the nations. Shake the nations. Joey Ramone, we got to play that whole song one of these days. Maybe we'll even do it tomorrow. Aaron Kreider, who was the worship leader for 9 years here at our Fire Church community, a graduate of our ministry school in Pensacola, and moved here to North Carolina with us, with his wife Holly and kids, and was our worship leader for years, still a dear friend of the ministry. And Aaron was, we were getting ready for our annual missions conference. We support our missionaries around the world, our workers that we've sent out, doing all kinds of gospel work, humanitarian work around the world. And every year we have a special conference. Many of them come in from around the world, and we help raise funds for them, and they share with our students at Fire School of Ministry. And we help unite our congregation around the cause of missions, local and worldwide. And Dr. Josh Peters, who's our missions director here, said to Aaron, he wanted them to write a new song for the conference. And Aaron wrote this tremendous song, Shake the Nations. Friends, my heart beats for that. Does your heart beat for the Great Commission? I'm not trying to condemn you. It's just like a doctor's checkup. We're asking some questions. Does your heart beat to see Jesus glorified in the ends of the earth? How much of your thinking is consumed with that? How much of your energy is consumed with that? How much of your finances is consumed with that? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. First hour, I talked about the gospel of martyrdom versus the gospel of success, the gospel that says my life for the gospel, my life for souls, versus the so-called gospel that is just a self-help improvement, make me bitter and bigger and better message. And then, first half hour of this hour, I've talked about how the words of Jesus and the values of Jesus turn everything upside down. Turn upside down the values of this world. That which is highly esteemed among men, Jesus said, is an abomination in the sight of God. 1 John, the second chapter, carrying out the spirit of that, says, don't love the world into the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life, is not of the Father, but it's of the world. And the world and its lust pass away, but he who does the will of God remains forever. You know, we're in this world, but we're not of it. We don't bow down to the systems of this world, the values of this world, the gods of this world. We enjoy this world. 1 Timothy 6, God's given us richly all things to enjoy. And we love life and we live life to the full, but we don't cling to our own lives, hold to our own lives. Our lives belong to Jesus. And if we live or if we die, we live or die as his witnesses. And I want to ask you the question in these minutes that we have together in the last half hour of our 2 hours on the air. And not to condemn you, but rather to check on you. How much of a burden do you have for the Great Commission? How deeply does your heart beat to see lost people saved, to see people who don't know the Lord come to faith in your local community, in your neighborhood, around the earth? How consuming is that to you? You say, well, you know, my vision is really to help people. You know, I do a lot of work with education and kids that struggle with education. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's part of the gospel. But does that exclude a burden from seeing people come to faith? You say, well, you know, I'm a worship leader. The Lord's really called me to lead people into the presence of God and worship. Oh, extraordinary. I mean, what a high and lofty calling. But when you come into his presence, doesn't he share his heart with you? Doesn't he share his life with you? Isn't there a relationship where his heart becomes your heart and your heart becomes his? You say, you know, well, my burden is to provide for my family. You know, we're under financial pressure. I got kids I got to take care of. I got a wife who's pregnant and got an infant at home, too. I've got to care. By all means, be responsible, sir. But aren't there lost people in your job and lost people that live next door to you that God wants you to reach? Where's our heart for the lost? Where's our burden for souls? It's one of the things that makes us realize how spiritually anemic our condition is. God wants to ignite something fresh, real, vibrant. Not some guilt trip, but a vibrant love for a dying world.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I take this revolution thing very seriously. I take it very seriously. I dare say I take it more seriously than the Occupy movement do and Tea Party people do. And why do I say it? Well, whatever their goals, they are primarily this world. In other words, when you're living in light of eternity, the burden is greater and more intense. But the revolution we're talking about is not a revolution that's going to be fought with earthly weapons, and it's not going to be fought with pride and arrogance and anger. It's going to be fought with self-sacrificing love. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Jim Elliot gave his life as a martyr in the mid-1950s, reaching the Alka Indians. And you read some of his journal entries leading up to that. 21 years old, college student at Wheaton. Listen to his prayer. Father, take my life, yes, my blood if thou wilt, and consume it with thine enveloping fire. I would not save it, for it is not mine to save. Have it, Lord. Have it all. Pour out my life as an oblation for the world. Blood is only of value as it flows before thine altar. Amy Carmichael, lifelong missionary in India from Ireland, she was explaining what it meant to be dead to self and alive to God, and she said this: dead to all one's natural earthly plans and hopes, dead to all voices, however dear, which would deafen our ears to his. I was on my knees praying last night about a deepening of my own relationship with God, about how deeply distracted I can be by living in this world and being active in the work of ministry, active in the work of the Lord, writing, teaching, preaching, and of course, above all, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, being here on the radio with you, that in the midst of that, I can lose sensitivity to the heart of God. And yeah, these things burn in me. These things are so real to me. But I know there's a deeper dimension of having the heart of God, the burden of the Lord, and living in light of eternity. Sometimes I don't want to know. Sometimes I don't want to think about certain things. Sometimes I don't want to experience certain things because they're too painful. I would rather just look in the positive, happy side instead of say, okay, we're here to get a job done. We're here on a mission. Come on, Jesus, before he leaves this world, leaves us with a commission. No, not just for those first disciples, for all of us. Paul says we're ambassadors. We're saying to the world, be reconciled to God. Earlier in the broadcast, I talked about Scottish missionary John Payton, who went to the so-called cannibals of the South Sea Islands. The first two missionaries that arrived there were killed by the natives and eaten. He gives almost five decades to the South Sea Islands with wonderful transformation of so many lives. Now, 1906, he's 82 years old. This is in my book, How Saved Are We, which I encourage every single one of you listening. If you take me seriously, if you take my voice seriously, if you believe in what we're saying and what we stand for, and our heart for the gospel, and our heart for the lost, and our heart for souls, then get this book. I'll tell you how in a little while. We've got a package together with a CD. This is not a money-making venture on our part. This is getting resources into your hands. That's what it's about. John Payton, 82 years old, just months after losing his wife of 41 years, he's traveling to speak at a meeting in Australia when he was thrown from his buggy and knocked unconscious. But he insisted on preaching, bandaged head and all. What have I been spared for, he said, if it is not to use every remaining opportunity to plead for the perishing heathen? I'm in Australia, and I've got to raise up people with a heart for the lost. I'm in Australia, I've got to raise up funds for missions. Whatever it was he was doing, and wherever they're lost in Australia, that's where his heart was. What have we been spared for if not to respond to Payton's plea, to respond to the cries of the lost, to respond to the call of the Lord? Why else are we here? This is, again, not to condemn us. This is to invite us. This is to say there is something glorious that we can step into. In fact, let me share this with you. I was reading this over the weekend, and boy, my heart was stirred afresh. Here's a quote from Eberhard Arnold. He was a radical German Christian leader, 1883-1935. Quote, "The early Christians were revolutionaries of the spirit, heralds of the last judgment and the coming transformation. They had to be ready for martyrdom at any moment. Their witness meant they had to reckon with being sentenced to death by state and society. Therefore, martyrs were those witnesses ready to die for their faith, those who bore this testimony before kings and judges with the steadfastness of soldiers of God. They were martyrs, that is, confessors, even if they did not have to die. To give witness is the essence of martyrdom." Let me just interrupt this to say that that's what we're talking about, being a witness where you live. Some, yes, called out to give your lives for the gospel in a foreign world. But to have the spirit of martyrdom is not to have a death wish. It's to say, I am willing to be a witness, whatever it costs me. No, not in an obnoxious way, not in a way where it's all about us. But I'm willing to stand for Jesus. I'm willing to stand for what's right. I'm willing to be a witness in my college class. I'm willing to be a witness in my place of business. I'm willing to be a witness in the neighborhood. I'm willing to be a witness in the newsroom where God's opened this door for me, and to be unashamed of Jesus. You look at a Tim Tebow, an athlete like that who has so clearly put his witness on the table for all to see. People hate him, people love him, but you know who he is. You know who he is. Eberhard Arnold says to give witness is the essence of martyrdom. Martyrs uphold the truth of their testimony as eyewitnesses of the Lord and his resurrection. They see Christ and become his prophetic spirit bearers. Through the spirit, the blood witness of the martyrs becomes part of the decisive battle waged by Jesus, the battle in which he himself died as champion and leader of the future. By dying, he finally judged and routed the hostile powers of the present age. Put to death by the most devout Jewish people in the Roman state, Christ fettered and disarmed the demons and their darkness through his cross. Since then, each new martyrdom, each new dying with Christ becomes a celebration of victory over the forces of Satan. Some of the greatest leaders in the church included men like Ignatius, who was fed to wild beasts, Polycarp, who was burned at the stake, Justin Martyr, who was beheaded. Some of the greatest reformers of the late Middle Ages included men like John Huss, who was burned at the stake, Girolamo Savonarola, who was tortured, strangled, and burned at the stake, William Tyndale, who was also strangled and burned at the stake. Never forget, friends, the English Bible you hold in your hand today cost Tyndale his life. Most recently, missionaries like Jim Elliot, Nate Saint, Roger Uterin, Ed McCulley, and Peter Fleming, martyred in 1956 or 20 years before them, John and Betty Stamm, left an eternal legacy in just a few short moments of obedience to death. What's the point of sharing these things with you? It's to say that there's a different spirit and different mentality. Let me give you an example. I've got a friend who's been a missionary for decades in Italy. He's lived very sacrificially, little hut, little trailer, or even a tent, traveled around the nation with a missions team just to win the loss, done it for decades. He was visiting Germany one time, dear friend of mine named Clark. And before the service, a brother came driving up from the church there. He's visiting a church service, comes driving up before the service in a really nice car. And my friend Clark says to him, "Hey, man, that's a nice car you've got there. It's a nice car you've got." And the guy was offended. He thought Clark was making fun of him for having a nice car. And, you know, he thought Clark's a missionary, lives sacrificially. He's judging me for having a nice car. So he took offense. He said, "That's not my car. That's the Lord's car. The Lord orchestrated that. The Lord gave me that car. The Lord worked a miracle for me to have that car. That's the Lord's car, not my car." Clark was being serious. He said, "Hey, man, your car, the Lord's car." It's a nice car. It's just telling you it's a nice car. Well, during the service, Clark is handed a note. Brother Douglas, the missionary from India, part of their bigger team, the missionary from India has just arrived at the airport and needs a ride. Well, Clark didn't have a car. And he thought, "Wait a second. I'm sitting next to the brother who owns the Lord's car." And he said to him, true story. I've asked Clark to verify this. True story. Clark turns to this guy and says, "Hey, could I use the Lord's car to pick up our missionary from India at the airport?" And the guy says to him, "That's not the Lord's car, it's my car. You're not taking my car to the airport." And Clark said to me, "Oh, how quickly the ownership changed. I thought when we got saved, we said, 'Lord, here's my life. Lord, I give you my life. Lord, forgive me for my sins. I confess Jesus as Lord.' Isn't that what it means to confess him as Lord, that he's now the master, that he's now the owner, that we take our orders from him? Not just he's there to bless us and help us, not just that he's there in times of trouble, not just that he's there to help us get through difficult times, and he is, but we're called into his service. 2 Corinthians 5:15 tells us that he died for all. That means that all died with him, that we now who live don't live for ourselves, but for him who died for us and rose from the dead. That's why Paul writes in Colossians 3 to the believers there, not to the super saints, the superstar Christians, but to all the believers, for you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. Friends, that's the normal New Testament mentality. We need an awakening to grab hold of it here in America, but there's nothing stopping us individually from taking hold.
Of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, friends, we are not here to have an extended vacation. I'm looking forward to taking a vacation. Nancy and I haven't taken one in a long, long time. Looking forward to it. Vacations are fine, but we do not have a spiritual vacation here in this world. We have a spiritual battle. We have a spiritual mission. We have a spiritual assignment. And we now belong to Jesus. What's he called you to do, friend? What's his will for your life? I don't know. How about seeking him and saying, Lord, why do you have me here? Why'd you save me? I understand sometimes we're just in survival mode. All hell breaks loose against us. I understand that. And sometimes we're, you know, just day to day, by the time the day's done, you're exhausted. You can't be thinking about lost people in the jungles of Africa. You know, you've got to get up and work tomorrow morning and your back hurts and finances are tight and your marriage is on the rocks. And I understand that the biggest thing God's calling you to do right then is get hold of him and see your marriage through and so on. I understand that. But for the bulk of us, it's not just survival only, friends. There's a purpose for your life. Paul writes to the Corinthians and says, run your race with perseverance. Run your race with perseverance. Run your race so as to win. It's Hebrews 12, run with perseverance. 1 Corinthians 9, run so as to win. I want to ask you honestly, are you in the race? Yeah, I am believing God for a raise, and I'm believing God for a better house. I'm not talking about that race. Are you in the race? I am going to be the best athlete that I can be. Okay, fine, and use it for the glory of God. I understand. Are you in the race? In other words, is there a goal, a mission? Boil it down. Tell me what you're living for. Well, I don't hurt people. Oh, come on. Can't we do better than that? Well, I'd like to be a good Christian. What does that mean? Jesus says, follow me. I want to challenge you to read the words of Jesus afresh and read them as if he really meant what he said. I was just reading through some passages, waiting to go into the dentist today and reading through. It's, whoa, this is strong stuff. You know what I thought of? Whenever I read in Matthew 5, you are the light of the world, the city set on a hill cannot be hidden. What do I think of? I think of that is our call to shine brightly. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. That's what I always think of when I read it. But there's something so obvious that I haven't focused on enough. Just a couple verses before that, Jesus says, you're the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, what good is it? It's useless, just going to be thrown out and trampled by people, right? So if the salt loses its saltiness, what's the good of it? You're the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. In other words, we're going to be seen for good or for evil. We're going to be seen for our good works or our bad works. We're going to be seen for those things. I have no question about that. That's why if we're not shining, oh, friends, please hear me, if we're not shining, if we're not bearing fruit for the gospel, if we're not making a difference, if our lives are not different than the world, if the same scandals are found in our homes, if same scandals are found in our churches, if the same scandals are found in our own lives that are found in the world, if we're not truly different by the gospel, that's going to be seen. And that's why the gospel is mocked. As much as the world hates the light, as much as the world hates the truth, as much as the world hates us for following Jesus and carrying our cross and being his servant, I also want you to say that the world hates our hypocrisy because it knows we should be different. I want to propose to you that there's more to God than you've yet had and experienced. I want to propose to you that there's more to being a follower of Jesus than you've yet known or experienced. I want to propose to you that there's a deeper place in God that he is inviting you to. I wrote the book, How Saved Are We? It's under 130 pages long, and I want to urge every one of you listening to get this. It's a book to believers that'll pierce your heart and draw you in. If you're hungry for the Lord, if you want to go deeper in God, if you want your life to be effective, I'm telling you, this book will revolutionize your life. I've met people who told me they read the book 10, 20 years ago. It rocked their world, and they've been on fire ever since. I've met these people. Here's what I wrote on the back of the book. For years, we've preached a defective message, and now we have a defective church. This unsettling book challenges us to ask ourselves what kind of born-again experience we've had. If it calls from us no personal sacrifice, produces virtually no separation from the world, and breeds practically no hatred of sin, read this book and find out just how saved we are. It's time for a rude awakening. And I wrote this, because our gospel message has been deficient, our disciples are now deficient, the American born-again church is deficient, our lifestyles give little evidence of a real transformation, and concepts like sacrifice and suffering for the Lord are almost foreign to us. Even our thriving congregations need a radical reorientation. We've heaped up blessings for ourselves in this life, but has lost sight of eternity. God is not pleased with all this. You say, oh, another book to condemn me. No, a book to show you there's more. A book to call you deeper. A book to break your heart. A book to ignite something in you. I preached a message in the midst of great outpouring and revival at a leadership conference called Call to Die. I had leaders of missions organizations and others come to me and say this was the message they needed. This was the message that hit home. This was the message that made a difference. The need is great, I said, December 2nd, 1998. The hour is late. The laborers are still few. Something has to change if we were really to see a worldwide visitation of the Spirit in our lifetimes. I really want to encourage you, friends, rather than just giving a $20 donation to our ministry, for $20 we want to send you my book, How Saved Are We?, and the audio CD, Called to Die. We go through the language of Jesus in the New Testament. We go through following the footsteps of the first disciples. We explain how the church has gone soft, as George E. Failing said, in the days when communists were sacrificing for their mission, we Christians have given Calvary to the communists. They accept deprivation and death to spread their gospel. Well, we Christians reject any gospel that does not major on healing and happiness. One of my friends, Jeff Bernstein, who was a missionary for years in greater Soviet Union, in Russia and Kazakhstan, he said, by the world's standards, we Americans face the greatest temptation in respect to being lured away from God's true riches by temporal treasures. Friends, I'm here to make a difference in your lives. That's why I'm on the radio. That's why I'm on the radio, to help ignite something in you and call you deeper in God. So get this book, How Saved Are We?, together with the CD, Call to Die. When you get the CD, copy it, give it out to all your friends. It's yours to do that with, as long as you don't sell it. Get it out, spread the word. And I want to see you make a difference for Jesus and see your life bear much fruit. That's why I'm on the air. That's why we write these books. That's why we put out these messages. So call the order, $20 postage paid for the book and the CD, 1-800-278-9978. If you could add more to that to help us with our radio broadcast, wonderful. But everyone, at least, get the book and the CD, 1-800-278-9978. You can also order online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, we need to look at those who have given their lives for the gospel in past generations. We need to look at those who are giving their lives for the gospel around the world today. And we need to ask ourselves, are we following a different Jesus than they are? Are we taking up a different cross than they are? Or is it the same Jesus, the same cross, the same call, follow me?